Good afternoon. Welcome to the CHA Medicare Payment Workgroup conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there'll be an opportunity to ask questions. Please note that this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Alyssa Keefe. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much, and good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to welcome you all to our first 2020 convening of CHA's Medicare Payment Policy Workgroup. We really appreciate you all carving out an hour of your time for what is a highly technical call, but we know you are ready for this type of conversation. You are our go-to experts on all things Medicare payment policy, and so we really appreciate you joining us. My name is Alyssa Keefe. I'm Vice President for Federal Regulatory Affairs, and I have responsibilities for representing California hospitals and health systems with federal agencies. And as many of you know, I spend the bulk of my time working on Medicare and Medicaid policy issues. Before we dive in today, I wanted to quickly level set for those of you joining our group for the first time. I know this topic something that a lot of folks wanted to invite some other folks from their organization that may not regularly participate in this group to this call to learn and listen. And so I just thought it would be helpful to quickly review a little history of and role of this ad hoc work group, discuss our goals and objectives for our call today. Lastly, I have some personal news to share regarding a transition I will be making before I introduce our colleagues from HFMA for today's presentation. I am also joined today by three of my colleagues here at CHA. First, Megan Howard. She's our senior analyst. She works with me on all federal regulatory matters and is also based here in CHA's Washington, D.C. office. My colleagues Ryan Witz and Justin Ziambra from our Sacramento office. Ryan is our VP for Strategic Financial Initiatives. Many of you know of his work on our fee and other Medicaid financing issues. And Justin Ziambra, our Vice President for Data Analytics out of our Sacramento office as well. You all recall he worked with us quite a bit on our area wage index comments in our last rulemaking cycle. So wanted to welcome them and let them know that they are a resource to all of you. Just a quick history on this group, and I know many of you were part of it long before I arrived on the scene nearly 10 years ago, but this was originally a small working group of our allied association colleagues, primarily focused on Medicare and Medicaid DISH issues, and we used to call it the DISH work group. But with the passage of the ACA and greater need for very technical finance and reimbursement expertise to advise CHA on Medicare and Medicaid payment policy issues, we broadened this group to a representative group of CHA members along with our constituency groups, and have also brought in technical expertise from Toyon and Associates to assist us on things related to the Medicare cost report, worksheet S10, and wage index policy in particular. So we have been convening this group on an ad hoc basis, largely around the inpatient and outpatient rulemaking cycles, and we collectively as a group, I think, have been very successful in brainstorming consensus-based policies that have been advanced as part of CHA's comments and meetings with CMS. So this group has been invaluable to me personally and to CHA, and so we're really grateful for your continued engagement in this process today. Our goal is to share with you some work that's underway with our friends at HFMA. Many of you are members of HFMA. Many of you know that CHA has worked collaboratively with HFMA for a number of years. Previously, a colleague and I served on HFMA's Transparency Task Force, and we shared a lot of our work around modern pricing with Rick and the team. So we have an ongoing working relationship with them. And so when all of us saw the very short RFI that was in last year's IPPS proposed rule related to the cost report and charges, we as a group during last year's rulemaking cycle certainly discussed briefly what our comments might be. We largely believe that obviously CMS was very interested in public comments around the continued value of the chargemaster charges in setting hospital payments, as well as the costs associated with maintaining the chargemaster for Medicare cost reporting and payment purposes. And so the agency was reaching out on various ways to possibly modernize or streamline the Medicare cost reporting process. And this was very aligned with the work that CHA had done around modern pricing way back in 2012 to 2013 and 14. It coupled along the work that of the Transparency Task Force that HFMA did. And when we talked about this RFI and the IPPS rule, we wrote very short comments. We suggested that this was certainly a worthy topic for discussion. We suggested that CMS convene technical experts to discuss the ideas submitted via public comments and vet them extensively with stakeholders, because we believe that any changes would need time to be thoroughly vetted and thought through all the opportunities and challenges that would be presented. And so we discussed it briefly in this work group, but also were aware that HFMA was also looking at this topic. And we shared with you under separate cover in anticipation of this conversation the IPPS comments that were submitted by HFMA in response to this RFI, and I hope many of you had a chance to read a very thoughtful discussion and comments that were submitted. And what I thought would be helpful in our conversations with Rick and Chad would be for them to share with you kind of how that work came to be, the process that went into developing those comments, and where the HFMA work is currently. Because as you all know, we are on the verge of an inpatient rule being released in April. When I shared with Rick and Chad just the thoughtful dialogue that we have in this group on cost report and charge issues, I invited them to kind of share that directly with you so you all would have an opportunity to ask your questions, and they were so gracious to agree. So in the interest of time, I just would love to introduce very briefly Rick Gundling, who is the Senior Vice President for Healthcare Financial Practices at HFMA. He's responsible for the HFMA's technical and content direction leading to the organization's activities, and really manages a lot of the thought leadership efforts for HFMA. And then Chad Mulvaney is HFMA's Director of Healthcare Finance Policy. He's also based here in Washington, D.C., and is responsible for analyzing implications of legislative and regulatory developments on healthcare providers. So I just want to thank them both for their time today. I've asked them to share with us kind of the work of the CHAMP Task Force, and they'll talk for, I think, about 30 minutes, and then we'll open it up to your questions. As we invited both the work group as well as your government relations colleagues to this work, because this usually is discussed in rulemaking, and our government relations colleagues are always mindful of things that need to go in comments. We did do an operator-assisted call. So for those of you that have not joined the Adobe Room, please do, because we can utilize the chat box option, the Q&A option. But at the end of the presentation, we'll open it up to your questions. So with that, I am going to turn this over to Rick Gundling to get us started, and I hope that was a helpful introduction to kind of pave the way for you, Rick, to level set for us and take us through the work that you have underway at HFMA.
Absolutely. Thank you, Alyssa, and thank you for inviting us, Chad and me, to be able to join you. I really appreciate being able to have the open dialogue. I think what I'll do today is, in the short time we have together, is really give you a background of the task force. Chad will go through some of the solution overview and implementation requirements, and we can open it up for questions. So I think that'll be kind of an action-packed next 45 minutes or so. So as Alyssa was saying, that we had worked, HFMA and CHA, six or seven years ago on transparency, building off the modern pricing that CHA had been working on, working with the American Hospital Association, AHIP, other employer groups, a broad section to talk about how to do better, more transparent pricing for patients. And one of the barriers that we had talked about with the work group is what stops you from really rationalizing your prices, your charges for the consumer? And the Medicare payments was one of the main issues that had come up. Since 2009, acute hospital charges have increased about 31% relative to their Medicare allowable cost to provide the care. You know, that charge inflation has, you know, impacted and distorted what, you know, consumers are paying, what they perceive health systems are receiving for the care. And we also wanted to talk about, well, why can't you rebase your charges? And, you know, the issue comes up is, well, Medicare uses charges for their payment policies and how they pay us. So if I rebase my charges, I could be financially harmed. So the task force, the CHAMP stands for Charge Alternatives for Medicare Payment. And so the task force is really focused on the Medicare part of it. And then to create an environment that's more conducive to hospitals working with their commercial payers and the state Medicaid plans after that. So the focus of this task force is to develop alternative methodologies that reduce the use of Medicare charges in determining Medicare payment. Right now, they use charges to approximate costs, and we have some alternatives to that. Resolve some of the ancillary issues around the Medicare payment. We were very concerned in our work group to not have Medicare, the redistribution of payments based from this, rural to urban, academic medical centers to non-teaching facilities, those types of things. We didn't want unintended consequences, and we wanted to collaborate very closely with CMS on this so that when they were making any changes or looking at, because the focus of this administration has very much been on prices and transparent prices and using charges for as a proxy for prices, which again causes a lot of distortion and confusion for patients. But the one thing that I think is a misnomer is that sometimes people think we want to eliminate the charge master. And that's not the case. We're just, because charges are still going to have to be used by commercial payers, self-pay, other types of arrangements. It's just decoupling it from the Medicare payment portion is what we're focused on. And this is our task force that we've been working with to make sure that we have some of the best minds across the country. There's about 24 health systems from for-profit to critical access hospitals, teaching, non-teaching. I mean, some of the health systems are on the call today with us. Sharp, Cedars-Sinai, Kaiser Permanente have been very active participants with us in developing that. So we very much appreciated it. So with that, I think, you know, just to kind of give you the quick background, you know, five-minute kind of overview, I thought at this point I would turn the call over to Chad to get into much more of the details of the payment issues and the direct costing methodology that we're talking about. So with that, Chad, I can turn it over to you.
Rick, thank you, and Alyssa, thank you for the invitation, and certainly for everyone on the call, I appreciate your time and look forward to our conversation. Really want to spend a little bit of time talking about how we got here before we actually end up, or before we move into what the solution is. And I think one of the principles that we had starting out was that we didn't want to reinvent the wheel. And so what that meant was two different things for us that we have applied throughout this process. The first is that as much as possible, we wanted to stick to existing Medicare reimbursement structures so as not to unseat existing practice. And so as one example of what that would mean is we're not doing anything that would tinker with the definition of Medicare allowable cost, and that will come into play in a couple of slides. The other thing we did was we wanted to look for other analogs outside of the U.S. because we know other countries use MSDRGs as the backbone for their inpatient payments and also use similar bundles as conceptually similar to APCs for their Medicare or for their outpatient service payments as well. And so we have a sister organization in Australia, and Australia also uses a MSDRG system for their inpatient payments. And so we looked to see what we could learn from them. And I think one of the things that really attracted us to Australia was that they have a wide range of hospitals, from everything that we would look to and recognize as a large teaching hospital all the way down to essentially what in the States would be a critical access hospital, but what for them is like a two-bed bush hospital. And so in looking over how Australia gets their data and sends it to their centralized costing authority to set MRG or MSDRG weights and outpatient payment rates, they have a process that is conceptually very similar to the U.S.'s Medicare cost reporting process. And what they do is they basically, instead of as we do it, which is provide part of the data through the cost report, and then on the back end, provide data also through billed charges, they do it all through the cost report. And basically what they do is in step one, they identify relevant expenses, which is essentially our creating worksheet A. Two, they do something called creating a cost ledger, which is both matching expenses with the activity or the revenue center in which the activity occurred, or the cost center in which the activity occurred, and then also removing cost for anything that is under their system non-allowable, and then also bringing back in additional costs that we would recognize as home office costs. In step three, creating the final cost center, they step down overhead costs using allocation statistics and methodologies that I think many of us would find very familiar. And then in step four, they identify initial products, and the way they break that down is patient care and non-patient care. And within patient care, you've got inpatient, which is the DRG, and then outpatient, which for them is basically five different bundles that relate to different outpatient services. And then you've got education, research, et cetera. And then in the sixth step, they start to map intermediate products, which is MRIs to ED visits, for example, or supplies to other expenses, which, you know, we recognize as either APCs or MSDRGs, but it's not done kind of at the cost report submission process. And then in the last stage, they review and reconcile, which we more or less do on the front end through tying worksheet A to audited financial statements. And this is really more just a mapping of exactly what I've described. And so the one thing that we're missing from doing this on the front end is sort of that step five where they're assigning expenses, intermediate expenses to it, but doing it in a prospective manner as opposed to retrospective. So as I mentioned, what we do today is we submit the cost report where CMS gets the cost to charge ratio. Then 2 years after the fact, they use billed charges to convert that cost or those charges to cost. And so that creates a couple of issues, which we'll touch on in one or two slides. In terms of the benefits of this, that time lag between when the cost report is filed and the CCR is created and the actual billed charges creates a problem of periodicity. And so the most specific way that it manifests itself is there is still an opportunity for hospitals to potentially increase their outlier payments by increasing their charges. And while CMS does have a methodology to account for that through outlier reconciliation, when you look at kind of the rules as to how that's supposed to work, there are pretty sizable holes through which if a health system wanted to do this or a hospital wanted to do it, they still could. And on the back end, everyone sort of suffers for those that do it if it's still being done because it impacts the fixed loss outlier threshold. The other issue that we believe that this would resolve, at least from a CMS perspective, beyond kind of what the work group is hoping to accomplish in creating an environment that is more conducive to transparency, is it would minimize charge compression. And probably the best example of that is if you think about many of your organizations or organizations that are providing CAR T therapy, many of them are hesitant to gross up those charges so that that when CMS converts the charge to cost using the CCR, the computed cost would actually match the actual cost. And so therefore they're being under reimbursed. And so that would be one other benefit of what we're proposing, and we'll explain how that happens in a couple of slides. In terms of statutory authority, I'm going to skip through the next three slides fairly quickly, but suffice to say that each of these slides explains how we believe that what we're proposing CMS can do through the regulatory process and would not need to go back to Congress to get additional statutory authority. When you look through the various regs that govern how weights are set, outliers are calculated, new technologies are paid for, the intent in the statute is for CMS to base each of these items on something that is a proxy for cost. And our argument to the agency is that why not, instead of using something that's a proxy for cost, use something that better approximates cost or is actual cost. So in terms of what the actual solution is, I'm going to walk through both inpatient and outpatient. And really what we're proposing would be for hospitals and health systems to use data from their internal costing system to, at the per discharge level or at the outpatient service level, the APC level, calculate for each service what their internal cost is, use that to create a allocation statistic that could then be applied to the allowable cost off of worksheet B part one, and then use that to report the actual cost or the actual allowable cost to CMS. And what that would do is it would eliminate both the periodicity problem, and which would then create the environment where hospitals could rebase charges. And on the back end of this, we'll get into some conversations about alternative ways for outliers and new technologies and critical access hospital outpatient payments to be made, because these are the things that would be impacted by this. So at its simplest for outpatient, which is relatively straightforward, the first step for a hospital would be to understand from its internal costing data what percentage of its inpatient costs are related to Medicare patients versus all services. And so from there, in step two, you would take the percentage of your Medicare inpatient to your total cost off of your audited financial statements. And then in step three, you would allocate a certain amount of your allowable cost that is related to the Medicare program and create a bucket of allocatable costs that can be spread down to each of your inpatient discharges for Medicare. And then in step three, what you would end up doing is multiplying the Medicare allowable costs related to Medicare inpatient discharges times the patient-specific cost. And we can walk through an Excel example of this because it's a little bit easier to see when you put it in a spreadsheet format. So if you take a hypothetical example of a small hospital, one that has $10 million in total expenses, so if you look at the first column on the list at the top, $10 million is the total expense at worksheet A, column 3, line 200. The Medicare portion of this, based on the internal costing system for inpatient, is $2.5 million. The $2.5 million divided by the $10 million gets us to the 25% that is highlighted by the red box in the center column. If you go up and look at the top in the third column over, the allowable cost at B part 1, line 118, is $9.5 million. And so if you multiply the 25% times the $9.5 million, you end up with approximately $2.375 million in allocatable costs that you would then spread over your Medicare inpatient discharges. Taking it then down to the case level, what you would do is in step two, you would get the cost per case for each of your discharges. And for that, and so you kind of continuing the example, we have $2.5 million in cost at the very bottom for total Medicare inpatients. If you look at patient number one at MSDRG 64, their internal cost for that specific case is $17,800. So the allocation statistic for that case becomes 0.71, and that's multiplied times the 2.375 million to get a Medicare allowable cost for the case that would then be reported to Medicare of $16,912. And so one of the questions that commonly gets brought up is how would this be submitted? What we're anticipating is that this data would be provided to Medicare in an off-cost report log that would be conceptually similar to what we're providing today for Medicare bad debt, Medicaid patients for the Medicare DSH calculation, and also similar to the logs that are provided for uncompensated care data. Outpatient is similar, but it's a little bit more complicated, simply because, number one, you end up with cases that have multiple APCs, and in many instances, it's hard to figure out which services are aligned with which APC if it's not the triggering CPT or HCPCS code. And so where this is going to differ is that, you know, step one is pretty much the same. We figure out how much of our total cost from worksheet A is attributable to Medicare outpatient cases, and we develop a statistic for that, and that becomes the pool that we allocate to our Medicare outpatient cases. In step two, what we then do is we break out costs based on services provided for cases with single APCs, multiple APCs, and non-APC-based services. And then we figure out how much of what we can allocate down, or how much of the total cost should be allocated down to single APC services. And again, we're sticking to single APC services because those are the things that we can accurately attribute services and costs to, and it's also conceptually similar to what Medicare does today when it sets APC weights. They end up throwing out about half the claims in any given year in terms of when they actually go to calculate APC weights. In the fourth step, we calculate at the APC level, not the case level, the statistic. Some of the feedback that we got is that trying to allocate costs down to individual patient level APCs, it would be unwieldy given the volume of APCs that would entail. So we end up aggregating at the cost at the APC level. And then at the end, we end up basically calculating the per APC by taking the total number of APCs provided and dividing it through by the total cost. One of the side impacts of not calculating this down to the individual case level, and we'll talk about this more towards the end, is that we would no longer receive outpatient. One of the things that we are suggesting to CMS is to remove the Medicare outpatient outlier payment and then just put those dollars, that 1% that's typically earmarked for that, back into the total APC system. When we asked if this was going to be an issue for the work groups in the room, or for the hospitals in the room, all of them said that the dollars weren't significant, and as long as they got pushed back into the OPPS system, they would be fine with that outcome. In terms of how this works, kind of looking at it again, walking through the Excel file, very similar to inpatient, we still, same example hospital with $10 million in cost at worksheet A, column 3, line 200. So you've got, again, $2.5 million in services related for Medicare outpatient services divided by the 10 million gives you 25%. Again, we have 9.5 million in allowable, and we end up with 2.375 again million in allowable costs for Medicare outpatient services. What we then do is we bring that 2.375 forward as our allocatable pool, and then in step two, we then break apart the single APC visits, multiple APC visits, and the non-APC services. And so based on the internal costing data, we have roughly $1 million in APCs related to, or payment costs related to single visit APCs. And we divide that through by the $2.5 million of total costs related to Medicare outpatient services. And so we allocate roughly 40% of the allowable costs down to single visit APC services, and that's how we get to the $958,000 at the bottom of the slide. Walking through this at the APC level, if you look at the second APC down, APC 5123, level 3 musculoskeletal procedures, so you've got for all 10 of the visits, or the 10 of those APCs, the total cost associated for those visits from the internal costing system was $50,950. You divide that through by the total single APC per claim allocation, the 1.8 million, and that gets you roughly 5%, which becomes the allocation statistic. You multiply that by the $958,000 that is allowable cost associated with the single visit APCs in terms of allowable cost, and that gets you to an allowable cost for the 10 visits of $48,402. That's in step five, the middle column, if you will. And then in step six, you divide that 48,400 by the 10 visits to get to a per APC cost of $48,040. In terms of where we would need to modify payments that are cost-based, there are really a handful of areas that would need some tweaking. And so inpatient outlier and inpatient new technology add-on payment currently are probably the primary one that would need to be addressed, as both are based on the cost-to-charge ratio times bill charges and the outlier payment formula. What we're proposing for both of those is to pay them based on some type of funds flow mechanism on an interim basis, based on a historical five-year average of payments for outliers and NTAP. And then when the cost report is filed, use the per case allowable cost that is filed with the cost report, run that data back through the outlier calculation for each discharge, and have it recalculate what the actual amount of outlier and new technology payments should be, and there'd be a reconciliation at the end. So it's conceptually similar to what we're doing today for interns and residents, things like that. For the new technology, or for the outpatient new device pass-through, what we are proposing is to include the cost of the device on the claim in a field associated with the pass-through device value code, and CMS can then base the payment just off of the actual cost. For critical access hospitals for outpatient services, because they're currently paid on a cost basis, and then there's reconciliation with the cost report, what we are recommending is that use a methodology similar to qualified cancer hospitals, where they would be paid based on APCs with a TOPS payment based on the prior year's cost report. Use that as a funds flow mechanism. And then when the cost report is filed, it could still be settled as today as it is, or in the future as it is currently today. And then for nursing, allied health, DME, qualified non-physician anesthesiologist costs, that is settled on the inpatient cost or on the Medicare cost report. And so what we would do is use the same allocation statistic for inpatient services and outpatient services to determine what Medicare's portion of that cost should be, and then flow that through settlement on the Medicare cost reports. There were a couple of items that we looked at because they are still charge-based and use the cost-to-charge ratio that we thought we might need to tweak. These included the Medicare uncompensated care DSH, organ acquisition for ancillary costs, and we elected not to address those because they do not have the periodicity problem that is currently the issue with outlier payments and NTAP. When payment for those is calculated, it's using the same cost-to-charge ratio as from the cost report in which the claim is made, so there isn't a timing issue that you see with claims in the cost-to-charge ratio for outliers. For outpatient outlier, as I mentioned, we believe that instead of coming up with an alternative payment mechanism, that CMS should do away with it, and we believe they have the statutory authority to do that as long as those dollars are rolled into the OPPS. And then this just provides a list of the other different types of payments that are not PPS that potentially could be charge-based that we evaluated. And what we found is that none of these things just were driven off of the charges and cost to charge ratio, so we don't need to come up with an alternative payment mechanism for them. In terms of helping hospitals transition to this new system, what we're recommending is that CMS provide a three-year transition window to help hospitals and health systems develop the costing capabilities necessary to report under this model if hospitals don't have the costing systems, and then also give CMS the time to develop new cost reporting forms, et cetera. During that three-year transition period, hospitals would continue to submit charges on Medicare bills, and cost-based payments would continue to be calculated using bill charges times the CCR. However, beginning in year four, we would recommend that hospitals file under the direct cost method. And certainly during that transition window, you may be able to bifurcate the world and say, you know, hospitals that have cost accounting systems and feel in place and feel comfortable in their capabilities to report under this methodology could use the current methodology to give CMS and hospitals some experience, while those that don't have the capability or don't feel confident enough in their capability can take that time to develop what they need. And then in terms of transitional resources provided by CMS, you know, one of the things that the group recommended was CMS providing a minimally viable cost accounting system to help those hospitals that are that do not have a cost accounting system and are probably not large enough to be able to afford one. And the analog that was used is evidently during the time when cost reporting software first became available for health systems that couldn't afford to purchase CostPack or whatever your software of choice would be, CMS had a utility out there that you could, I guess, request via mail and install, and it would basically provide a sufficient cost reporting system. However, it didn't give you the analytics that like a CostPack has to allow you to provide to do year-over-year comparisons. And so conceptually, we think that CMS could develop something like that. The other thing that we think that CMS will need to provide is an APC grouper with the capacity to reprocess outpatient claims from hospitals without access to a costing system, so it's easier to assign APCs to patient cases or to patient services and the cost that's associated with them. In terms of next steps, we are currently working to develop the funding to model this proposal, and really what we want to get out of the modeling is three things, and we're going to use data from the cohort of hospitals and health systems participating in the CHAMP task force. But what we first want to understand is whether we can actually pull the data to calculate the basic statistics at both the MSDRG and APC level. We then want to, if we can do that, compare the cost per case and cost per discharge, cost per outpatient service to what is currently calculated under CMS's methodology to make sure that those two things line up within a reasonable range, which is what we believe they will, but want verification. We then also, if we have a sufficient pool of data to replicate MSDRG and APC weights and compare them to what would have been calculated under or what was calculated in the historical period to make sure that we're also not, as Rick mentioned, reallocating funds across services or types of hospitals. And then finally, using all of this information, we want to analyze the payment impact on it using historical data to understand what would happen to inpatient outliers, inpatient new technology payments, critical hospital outpatient payments, and also outpatient new technology payments. In terms of implementation requirements, we already talked about the basic cost accounting utility and also the APC grouper. We also think that CMS will need to provide in a more user-friendly manner the detailed inpatient and outpatient PSNR. A couple of other things that the group suggested was that CMS provide a reconciliation threshold, because we know that because Medicare eligibility could change or may not be, is not exactly a static thing, there would be a threshold of reconciling the PSNR back to the hospital's actual internal cost data to make sure that, you know, you've got a reasonable approximation of your Medicare cases, but it doesn't have to be exact, because that could be a pretty excruciating exercise. And I think one of the more important things, fourth, is the confidentiality of cost data. Because this would be actual allowable cost data provided by the hospital in real time, if you will, we would want CMS to hold that data as confidential, not available for public disclosure. And our argument here is that they're doing something similar with the commercial rates that they're using to set the clinical lab fee schedule. And so therefore, we think we have a pretty good argument as to that they've done it before and they should be able to do this for us in this instance. And then in terms of definitions, we think that CMS needs to provide some additional data or some additional specificity around who actually would be a Medicare patient for purposes of this. And so what we're recommending is that anyone who has Medicare as the primary payer, including those with exhausted eligibility, would be a patient for purposes of the direct costing model. One of the other things that we believe needs to be defined is what a final costing model is. And so what we're suggesting is that would be the model that for a given year incorporates adjustments from the facility's annual audit of financial statements. And then the third thing, audit criteria for costing models. What we believe is that providing the per discharge visit would not be overly burdensome. However, you know, what we don't want is to have an auditor coming in and asking for revenue level code detail, because the volume of data that would need to be manipulated could be pretty prohibitive. And then one of the other things we've done is we've looked through the cost report to identify worksheets that would need to be adjusted. The actual cost reporting impact is relatively small. This table provides kind of an overview of where there would need to be tweaks. And also there's more detail on kind of how the data would flow through, or currently flows through, in the appendix. So with that, I'll stop here with about 14 minutes, 15 minutes left, and see what questions we have from the group.
Thanks so much, Rick and Chad. Really appreciate a very fast-moving presentation. There's a lot here. We recognize that. This is probably a conversation that can be continued, but we wanted to allocate some time here. So just to level set again, just want to remind folks that this is not a CMS proposal at this time. CMS did a request for information in the last rulemaking. HFMA had convened a task force and have made some recommendations. We thought that bringing those kind of real time to you to get your thoughts and questions would be a valuable educational opportunity for all of you as you continue to in the work that you're doing, and also, you know, just for situational awareness about proposals that are going into CMS. As a reminder, CHA has advocated that all of these policy proposals be part of a MTAG or technical advisory committee so that they could be fully vetted with stakeholders, multiple stakeholders, prior to any implementation. And as you guys can imagine, these are not simple undertakings. These would take quite frankly, years for the agency to and the providers to make changes. So I just want everyone to just be cognizant of the fact that this is not a proposal and it just really a discussion and an opportunity for you guys to ask questions. So with that, operator, I'd like to ask if you could give our participants their instructions for online on the phone questions, and then I will look to the queue for our online questions. Operator?
We will now begin the question and answer session. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. At this time, we will momentarily pause to assemble our roster.
And while the operator is assembling the phone line questions, maybe Rick and Chad, you guys could talk a little bit about, I have a couple of questions in the queue about how are you sharing this with various stakeholders currently? So we're aware of it because you are gracious to, you know, share this with us and work with our other State Hospital Association colleagues. But can you share with the group kind of the rollout and outreach and communications in particular with rural providers and what their response has been?
Yeah, certainly. Alyssa, happy to start. Maybe Rick, you can jump in as well.
Absolutely.
So Henry County Hospital is one of the task force participants, and we specifically brought them in because they are a rural critical access hospital. And we've had Dave Muse as their CFO and also files their cost report as one of the members of our working group. And he's even been in all the conversations that we have. So we've specifically sort of built in an accommodation to make sure that we've got that feedback in there. But then also, if you look at many of the larger health systems that participate, they also have critical access hospitals with under their umbrella, if you will. And so their reimbursement teams have experts on critical access hospitals as well, and they've been instrumentally involved in this as well.
And that's going to be a focus of our modeling effort, is to examine the impact on rural and critical access hospitals to ensure that we understand the impact and there's no harm. So, I mean, that is definitely something that is part of our next phase of our modeling effort to make sure that we quantitatively estimate that.
Great. Operator, do we have folks on the line?
No, we don't. At this time, there's no questions.
Okay, I have a couple more in the queue. Obviously, we have a few more all-inclusive providers on the line and wanted to know if this has been addressed and how this would impact those that are the all-inclusive rate providers that don't necessarily fill out the extensive charge cost report as others, and have you discussed the impact on them?
Alyssa, that's certainly a great question. At this point, we would, similar to the current process, exclude all-inclusive rate providers from this. And our rationale is that my understanding is that what they submit today doesn't get incorporated in DRG or APC weight setting. And so given that it's a relatively small slice of the hospital population, that we could continue excluding them from this.
Yeah,
and some of the task force members actually have all-inclusive providers, rate providers,
yep.
So that we were able to probe that with them. So.
Yep.
Another online question, how is this different than historical cost-based reimbursement from days past?
So it's different in the sense that the allowable cost data would be feeding into the calculation of weights and rates for DRGs and APCs, so we'd still be on a prospective payment system. In terms of the outlier payments, again, it wouldn't be your actual cost, it'd be your allowable cost. So we may be, at least for outliers, going a little bit back to the future, if you will. And so that's more or less how those two things relate.
Thank you. Operator, do we have any more folks on the phone lines?
No, we don't have any questions at this time. So I'll turn the conference back over to you, Alyssa Keefe, for closing remarks.
I'm just going to give folks another minute. I know it was a lot of information to take in.
And this is Rick. And just, you know, feel free. You know, this does not have to be obviously the end of the conversation. This can be, you know, a continued conversation with us
and maybe
keep moving forward.
Rick,
so.
As you're continuing our conversations with both your task force, I know you've also been meeting with CMS folks and shared your views and recommendations with them. Could you share for the work group just kind of your read or the temperature of the agency regarding these recommendations? Are they positively viewing them? Do they have concerns? What are their, you know, what do they see as the opportunities or challenges?
Oh, absolutely. The conversations have been, you know, as you can imagine, cordial but guarded. Just trying to they're very interested in the modeling to understand the impacts as well. All the logistics that we talked about, what was the impacts to the cost report, the implementation period, will health systems be ready for that? Will they be ready for that? All those kinds of things are being talked about. They do, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning, they are feeling pressure from this administration for greater price transparency. They know charges are in the way for meaningful transparency. They're looking for different options. This is definitely an option that they are exploring further. So far, they're open to anything to look at that. So from that standpoint, I would think they've been quite receptive. And Chad, wouldn't you agree with that, some of the meetings that we've had that it's?
I would agree, and I think that they are interested in this approach potentially, and I believe there are probably other approaches that they're considering based on the feedback that they've gotten and also internal agency discussions. And so we've obviously been in conversation with them and continue to be in conversation with them. But the other thing I will say is we also, have been, as Alyssa mentioned, in conversations with other state hospital associations, the AHA, and also AHIP, the health plan trade association, really just trying to make sure that everyone is aware of what we have proposed and giving everyone an opportunity to ask questions just like we're doing today, because obviously the more questions we get, the more different issues get elevated for us, the better the proposal comes. So I thank everybody for their questions.
And just, you know, I say how we're socializing it, we are going to be speaking in early March at the AHA's spring regional policy board meetings. We'll do that over several meetings and days, you know, by satellite. So I'm trying to get as many, you know, kind of spread the word as broadly as we can.
Okay. A couple other quick questions. We have about 4 minutes left. I'm going to steal the last minute for myself. But could you just talk very briefly about what this would mean for kind of standards around cost accounting, the opportunities and challenges regarding the audit process? Has the work group discussed those issues and come to consensus around, you know, how they might make recommendations around those issues?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's certainly something we've thought a lot about. Where we ultimately ended up landing is that one of the modifications to the cost report would be on worksheet S2. And when you file your cost report, which you would certify on S2, is that the costing model that you use to develop the data that becomes part of the direct costing model is the same costing model that you use for management decision making. What we ended up doing as we explored this, we came to understand from the different cost accounting experts that the systems brought to the table that it would be fairly onerous for health systems to try to tinker with their cost allocations to game the system on this, and that maintaining two cost accounting models for this would be something that most wouldn't do. So number one, we think it's unlikely that folks would try to game the system. Number two, you know, we think with that certification, that should cover off on this. CMS has also asked us that exact same question, and the point that we push back to them on is that currently there is no structure around how you set your charges. And there's also very minimal auditing of, unless you have a cost-based unit or you have organ acquisition and transplant, there's very little auditing of your worksheet, A or B today. In terms of, I mean, basically they take it and tie it and call it a day at that point. So I'm not sure how this would differ as long as you're using sort of a standardized costing system and you're not sort of trying to manipulate things between two different cost accounting models. Rick, is there anything else you want to add?
No, I think you hit all the high notes on that. So.
Operator, just one last quick, any phone line questions in the queue?
Not at this time.
Okay, great. Then please, I want to extend on behalf of the work group and the entire CHA team here our thanks and appreciation for you all carving out time just for us. We're very appreciative. I envision that this conversation will continue and you will provide other opportunities for through various association and HFMA gatherings to learn more and keep up to date with the modeling that you all do, and we'll be eager to learn of the results of that as we go forward. And we'll continue to look in the rule for other things that CMS may be asking for. So thank you, Rick and Chad, for your willingness to participate. As a final note for those of you that have stayed on to the bitter end, I did want to share a bit of personal news with all of you. It's kind of the worst kept secret in town at this point, but after 9.5 amazing years here at the California Hospital Association, where I have just learned so much from many of you on this line in particular, and have come to work every day excited about what I would get to do and work on, because every day is different. I will be transitioning because I have a new opportunity that I could not pass up. I will be joining the Federation of American Hospitals on March 9th, where I will continue to work on many Medicare and Medicaid payment policy issues on behalf of our investor-owned colleagues who are members of the Federation. Many of you may know 7 of the 9 health systems have representation in California, so I feel like I am just kind of, it will be very much a seamless transition having worked with so many of you on these issues and over the course of the years that I have been here. But I did want to share that news with all of you. My last day in the CHA offices is this Friday. But I want to let you know you are in very good hands. My colleague Megan Howard will be a point person for all of you on Medicare reimbursement issues while they are in search of a new person to fill my role here at CHA. So we'll be a little short-staffed, but she will be supported by Ryan and my other policy team colleagues in the Sacramento office. There really is no wrong door, and Megan is the best of the best, and you will be fully supported as you enter a very busy rulemaking season. So I just my thanks to her and the team, as we have done a number of handoffs here this week. I know there will be many opportunities for you to engage directly with them, and please do not hesitate. I anticipate this work group will reconvene around rulemaking time, where you will tackle Medicare DSH and wage index, and rest assured, I will be talking to them as well. So thank you very much for your engagement in this work group. Thank you for the time and expertise you have lent to me personally. And with that, my thanks to HFMA and to all of you for engaging today. We will stand adjourned. Thanks, everybody, and have a fantastic week. Take care.
The conference has now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.